this has the opportunity for the greatest turnaround in college football exists here today, and it's not one to be taken lightly.
Welcome to Bring On the Podcast. Here's your host, Luke Thompson.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bring On the Podcast. I'm here with Derek Smith, my trusty sidekick, and today's guest is Cayman Sports Director John Kurtz. John, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. So, big Saturday coming up, Kansas State, Kansas. You know, Bill Snyder going for his 200th win. You know, is there any extra excitement around this week, you think?
There's probably some. I think it obviously means a lot more to the fans than it does to Coach Snyder, as he kind of reiterated on the coaches teleconference earlier today. Although he did get into a pretty long answer about like the support staff, Joanne, a lot of the people in the football office that have helped him out throughout the years, but. Yeah. I'll be really interested to see, assuming that they win, what he will have to say about it afterwards. I think there's a better chance of him perhaps reflecting on it after the game than going into it before the game. And the players, honestly, some of the players have been talking about it for a couple weeks. I'm sure Derek can speak to that, too. We've heard, you know, guys like DJ Reed. I'm trying to think. It's going back a couple of weeks, and they were already starting some of the chatter about that and wanted to get that for him. So I think there is some extra meat in there, and it's certainly appropriate that probably the school that he has dominated the most in the conference since he's been the head coach here at K-State would be win number 200. I mean, he's always seemed to put quite a bit of emphasis on making sure they lock down the state and just beating up their rivals. So that would be pretty poetic in a lot of ways, I think, for him to get it done.
And it's great that he comes to Manhattan, too, I think. And you talk about the dominance versus Kansas. I think I saw the average margin of victory is like close to 30 points or something. And, you know, there's been some games. I remember I went to a game at Bill Snyder Stadium East, so they won 66-0. I mean, do you think there's any like more motivation to run up the score, or maybe not, you know, have less mercy against Kansas?
Well, I think, I mean, honestly, throughout, I know Bill Snyder would never say it, but. Yeah. I think there is something to that, that, you know, over the years, I can think back to actually that the game that you're referencing when they were up 64-0, whatever it was in like the third quarter in Lawrence in 2002. And he ran in the fourth quarter, the number one defense back out there when Kansas had gotten into K-State territory to try and pitch the shutout, right? You know, I think there has been some of that. And I think honestly, strategically, that probably makes some sense. You know, when they're your in-state rival and it's as big a deal to K-State fans as it is to dominate that series, demoralizing your rival, I think, does have an effect, you know, kind of a positive effect for you, a positive effect for in-state recruiting. So I think just like with everything with Bill Snyder, you know, there's a method to the madness, so to speak, and I think that probably has showed up some throughout the years.
Yeah.
John, do you think that KU beating Texas this weekend adds any intrigue to the game whatsoever?
I think it does, actually. Now, whether it actually adds any intrigue to the game once the game actually starts, you know, if it actually affects anything on the field, that's probably a different answer that I would have for you. But, you know, it makes you pay a little bit more attention to it. I'll admit that, yeah, you probably shouldn't want Kansas to win football games, but it was kind of fun, you know. After we had wrapped up everything in Waco, we were sitting there eating dinner, some of us from the Powercat Game Day crew, and watching that game. And it was fun, man. It was fun watching Kansas get that done and some of the sideline shots of Texas players and, you know, just the whole deal. It was fun, and it did kind of add a little bit of something. Like, man, well, now these guys actually have done something to make you talk about them and raise an eyebrow, start looking into them a little bit more. Frankly, they have a defense that's played a little better throughout Big 12 play this year. They've got some guys that are actually fairly talented. So they've been more competitive. Obviously, they had the one-point loss to TCU in the Iowa State game, and now they actually broke through with a win. So I think that does make you pay more attention to them for sure.
Yeah, I actually didn't even pay any attention to the game at all until I saw Jesse Newell's tweet that it was 21-18, I think, with like 6 minutes left. So I turned it on after that, and I just watched, you know, until the end of the game, and I mean, I hate to admit it, but I was rooting for them too a little bit just to see, you know, if they could actually pull it off.
I was not. I went to school in Missouri, grew up in a Kansas State family, so the KU hate runs deep in my blood. But I'm sure, just quick side note, I'm sure you guys saw the press conference where Charlie Strong was asked about his future, and he said he didn't know, but his face said, "I know." So, just what do you guys think of Texas kind of dragging that out, not doing
anything? I hate it. I hate it. I went through and, you know, today, listening on the teleconference, Charlie Strong didn't really stick around very long, basically said, hey, I'll address everything at my normal weekly media conference, which his is always today. And I just, the fact that they won't get it over with, it forced him into this awkward press conference where he has to go up there and say, hey, all I know is that they're saying they'll evaluate me at the end of the year. And it just turned into all kinds of questions. And he somehow found himself like talking about stuff that had happened 2 years ago in the program and all the stuff that he had to get cleaned up. Just a lot of stuff that's really unnecessary, distracts you from the task at hand if you are actually trying to go and win this game on a short week, by the way, against TCU. It makes him look kind of foolish. They're setting him up to look foolish because we all know at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, even before the Kansas game, the guy was, you know, 95% not going to keep his job. Then you lose to Kansas. I mean, that, frankly, is a fireable offense when they haven't won a league game in 2 years. Yeah. That's not acceptable at Texas. He's going to be gone. But I just can't help but think in this whole thing, I come out of it with so much more respect for Charlie Strong than the University of Texas. Just from the word go, it's been a self-fulfilling prophecy that he was going to fail there. They had big boosters right away. There was the quote that came out from one booster when he was hired that, hey, this guy would be a great coordinator. And, you know, when you start it out like that, the chances of the guy actually succeeding, no matter how good of a coach he is, are slim to none. It just never seemed like a great fit. It always seemed like they wanted him out. They wanted an excuse to get him out. Now you have a really legitimate one with him losing at Kansas, but yet you're still going to drag it out. It makes no sense, and they need to just get it done and go get Tom Herman if that's what they want to do. I'm not sure that that's going to solve all the problems, but at least it would relieve Charlie Strong of having to deal with all this.
And then
picked up on it after our game with them, K-State's game against them, but Mike Perrin was getting peppered with questions after that game. So, I mean,
it's like every game this year. It seems like I see on Twitter someone talking about, well, Mike Perrin had no comment, or Mike Perrin said this. You know, when it turns into that type of a circus where the athletic director is having to be questioned about the coach, and then the coach is having to be questioned about his job after every single game, I mean, come on. I mean, a circus is really the only way I can describe it. You got, like, the players. There was the report that came out from, I think, Kirk Bowles with the Austin American Statesman. Some of the players were wanting to boycott the game this week. I mean, it's a mess. It is a straight-up mess.
I mean, it was so demeaning that somebody asked Charlie Strong, and he had to say, no, I'm not going to let my players boycott this game. It's just like, come on, guys.
And that's the other thing. You know, Charlie Strong has stood up there, and in so many ways, I don't know how he has been able to keep his cool with just the way he's been treated and the way everything's been handled there. And that's why I say, you know, situations like that where he goes up and says, no, we're not going to boycott the game. We're going to go out and do this. Like, Charlie Strong is clearly a great guy. Everyone that is around him and knows him will tell you he's a great guy. And just from everything I've been able to pick up, I got a lot of respect for him and how he has handled how all this has gone down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, speaking of coaches, have Kansas State's coaches finally figured out the value of Alex Barnes that we've all seen for a few weeks now?
Yeah, so that's something that I think going on about a month, right, everybody seemed to have figured out. If you didn't right away, it became pretty apparent at least a month ago that this guy's the most talented running back that they have. And the more and more I thought about it, it's like, out of skill position talent, is there a more talented skill position player on the roster? I'm not sure that there is, and when he's getting one touch in the first half of a game that you scored 7 points to a clearly lifeless Baylor team and you're losing at halftime, I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling. And we just have not been offered any kind of real explanation about it. You know, there was the awkward, hey, he's had some injuries to deal with, and then Kellis goes and asks him about said injuries, and he says, I've been fine. And same saga basically played out with Justin Silman in Ames, Iowa. Very similar situation there where when we started asking him about Snyder saying that he had been a little dinged up, he just had this real puzzled look on his face. Like, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? So I don't know what is going on there exactly. I Bill Snyder has always been really loyal to the assistants. So my thought there is maybe it's just some loyalty to Charles Jones and just seniority in general, I guess, with Justin Silman too. But I don't know. I honestly don't know enough to know if that's more on the offensive coordinators or if that's more on Snyder. But it certainly seems like going back to the Daniel Sams, Jake Waters saga, there's been a disconnect there somewhere from who's making the decisions on who's playing. And it doesn't seem to quite jive with the way Bill Snyder sees it, at least judging by what he tells us in press conferences. So I think this is just it's just the latest in one of those sagas where something is getting crossed. You know, the wires are getting crossed there. But I would think after seeing what Alex Barnes did, which was basically in a half, right? I mean, he sets, you know, all these records or gets his name in the top five of all these different categories. He did it in a half. I would think that has to put him in line to get, you know, I was looking through it, it seems like about 30 carries a game for the running backs in general. If he's not getting 15 of those moving forward, I mean, I think that's a problem.
Yeah. Just as long as the pendulum doesn't swing too far in the other way and you give him a Deontay Foreman, you know, 50 carries.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'd like to let it rip, see what happens. I mean, maybe not 50, but would it be interesting to see what happens if they hand it to, so he had what, 19 carries? You give him 36 carries, you know, in a game, see what happens, especially you got Kansas coming in. I know their defense has been the strength of their team, but, you know, go see what happens. I'd love to see it.
And I wouldn't mind cutting down on Jesse Ertz carries a little bit.
Well, right, that's the other thing. You know, it makes sense. And, look, Jesse Ertz makes a lot of plays. That fourth and two run that he had on Saturday might be the play of the year. It was ridiculous. But he's clearly not 100% healthy. And even when he is running around, he's not Colin Klein where he wants contact and he wants and can handle the workload of a 30-carry game, but they still do it. It's like if you got this guy that's as talented as Barnes is, you know, use that a bunch because he's – there's no attitude problems. He is the most – another thing, Derek, I'm sure you can attest to, he is the most humble guy that is, you know, about the most humble guy that we talk to.
And
I don't know what it is.
Silent. Just, like, he doesn't say anything. So he doesn't get himself in trouble.
He falls in line, man. I mean, he gives you the company line when you talk to him. So it's not like that's an issue. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they do have Bax and Stillman and Jones who have not been bad. They have the seniority and they hadn't done anything – really poor to say, all right, well, we need to find somebody else. That's really about the best explanation I could give you as to, you know, trying to piece it together why Barnes hasn't gotten more carries. But you're right, you know, you got to help out Ertz a little bit. He's the most talented guy you have. Clearly the passing game is not the way to go on offense. I really sincerely hope we see more and more of him.
Yeah.
And how nervous were you after, I think it was his first touchdown where he dropped the ball in the end zone? I was pretty nervous. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, you know, and I saw, who was it? It was Isaiah Zuber, I think, scrambled over to get the ball or something. And yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And then he also had the run, I don't remember if it was the next drive or two drives later, where he didn't score, but he had like a 12, 13-yard carry and got it down to like the three or the four, and it got kind of slapped out at the last second. And I was like, Don't give him any ammo. Don't give him any ammo. You got to stay in this game, man.
Yeah.
The thing that made me most laugh a little bit was I watched the, you know, the highlight package they put together, the school puts together after the game, and that was one of the featured runs, and you could see it very clearly fly out at the end of the round, and I was like, I don't know if I'd put that in the highlights, but okay.
Yeah, well, I haven't heard anything about hanging on to the ball being an issue with him. I mean, like, I've heard from a couple guys. Like, it took me longer than it should have. I'm ashamed to admit it now to come around to Barnes because I was hearing people tell me in fall camp that he was just destroying people and running over everybody in practice. And it's kind of like, well, I know he's a big guy. I didn't think he was fast enough to really make it, and he was so young. And but, you know, the evidence apparently has been there for a long time. So I don't know, man.
I mean, I'll be really surprised after Saturday if they can look away from him. Because that was one of the better running performances I've seen in a long time, probably since, I don't know, Daniel Thomas.
It's got to be, really. I mean, you know, John Hubert was a good running back, and I do think he gets overlooked. Friend Stanton Weber, who's doing Powercat Game Day with us, was quick to remind us of that when we started talking about it after the game. But yeah, in terms of just what physical specimen, putting it together all in a half, I think you probably are going back to Daniel Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, Hubert was good, but he didn't have the burst that that Barnes has off the line. I mean, somebody said on Twitter, is like, you hand him the ball and he's already got 4 yards. So,
well, that's the most amazing stat, I think, of everything he's done this year is he has not had a lost yardage play all year. You know, he has not been tackled behind the line of scrimmage once the entire season, which is crazy. There were a couple times, even Saturday, there was two carries, I think, where Baylor really had him dead to rights right about the line of scrimmage. He's always falling forward. He is not going to take a loss.
Yeah. I guess one thing maybe we haven't seen yet with Barnes, how he'd handle this, but and one thing about Hubert that was always sort of frustrating is he would get caught from behind on some of those long runs. Do you think Barnes would be able to outrun the safeties?
I don't know if he's faster than John Hubert, but he might be. I don't know. I haven't really seen him in the open field too much. I think he broke one. Was it against Iowa State or no?
I don't know. I know he got 8 carries against Florida Atlantic, and I was trying to think, like, did he have a big carry against Florida Atlantic?
I know he hasn't broken a long touchdown yet.
I think that's probably still to be determined whether or not he's got that type of speed. But I guess I would answer it kind of like this: is he definitively slower than Charles Jones or Justin Silliman? I mean, I don't think so. You know, I mean, that's always been the thing with Charles Jones too, right? Like, he doesn't have real breakaway speed. He's just, you know, kind of average in about every single category. He doesn't really hurt you, but he's also, you know, he doesn't have real game-breaking ability. We've certainly seen more burst from Alex Barnes. Whether or not it translates to breakaway speed, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it didn't, you know, I'm trying to think back to, like, Daniel Thomas, too. I mean, he didn't really have breakaway speed either, and it doesn't matter. You know, Colin Klein didn't, right? And you can ride those guys. We've seen them do it in this offense.
So I do want to ask, you know, given that you guys are worried about him dropping the ball in the end zone, understandably, what would happen if Alex Barnes or another KCA player went full Marcus Peters and punted a ball into the crowd? What would Bill Snyder do?
Oh, man. I just hate to think about it if it was Barnes because he's, you know, he's so young. You know, I think Charles Jones has built up enough goodwill, I think, to be able to somewhat withstand that. He's got enough clout as being a hard worker, former scout team player of the year. Like, he's worked his way up. Probably plays out a little bit differently, I would think, with Barnes.
Yeah. Charles Jones has been on an awful short leash show this year.
Yeah. That's true. There have been some weird, you know, and it's tough. I get it. It's tough with all the running backs they have. It is difficult to manage that because no one really has gone out and done anything really all that poorly, but it has been interesting the way that they handled that situation and how they've handled others.
Yeah.
Well, let's switch over to the other side of the ball. Normally, most years you'd say, hey, we have Baylor with 21 points. That's great, but not really the case this year. Again, Kansas, not a team you're going to worry about defensively too much, but, you know, for TCU in the bowl game, how much is this defense improving? How big holes are there still?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, how much do you take from what they did against Baylor? I mean, certainly you got to give them credit in general.
Right.
You know, they,
and I think it starts with the defensive line against Baylor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They got tons of pressure. They were living in the backfield. If Zach Smith was going to have a chance to get comfortable and showcase that big arm of his, they didn't really give him too much of an opportunity to. And quite frankly, you know, in the first half, they give up 14 points. Well, 7 of it came after the muffed punt that set him up in a bad spot. And the other 7 came after Jesse Ertz's fumble at the end of the half that put him in a bad spot. And I was surprised that we didn't get more of a review on the second touchdown anyway. It looked like the ball might have been dropped or hit the ground in the end zone. So, you know, there's a lot there where it could have even been less than just the 21. The one thing this defense has, I think in a lot of ways they have been a little frustrating that they haven't lived up to what I think we believe some of the potential is. I mean, you look at the individual pieces in the secondary. It seems like DJ Reed is better than what they had at corner last year. It seems like sophomore Duke Shelley's better than what they had at corner. It seems like sophomore Kendall Adams obviously would be better, and you got Dante Barnett back. So the sum of those parts should be much better, but a lot of the numbers yardage-wise tell you that they've actually been worse against the pass this year than they were last year. The one thing they're doing is forcing turnovers, and that showed up again against Baylor. So I think that's really the biggest difference. If you can turn teams over, actually get interceptions, which they wind up obviously with 3 in that game and 4 turnovers overall, makes a huge difference, you know, especially if you're going to play that Tom Hayes bend but don't break defense.
I mean, if you can play a game where Donnie Starks gets 2 interceptions, that's something else.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd had one prior to that game, had he? Ever.
He had not. No, those were his first 2 career picks, and you can tell that they're his first 2 career picks when he runs that one out of the end zone. Yeah. Everybody's telling him to stop. He admitted after the game that he had a play like that in high school or something. That was all that was going through his head, that he was going to run it back for a touchdown again. And so anyway, that was kind of funny.
Yeah. And you mentioned Duke Shelley, so I haven't been paying attention. I probably missed something. What's his status now?
Yeah, I mean, Snyder said after the game that he had not talked to the trainers yet. So, didn't know then. I can tell you it's the same ankle that was the problem against Oklahoma State. So, you know, that does make you worry. And I just happened to be – I had to run back to a photo room. So, I shoot video on the sidelines during the game, and I had to run back to the little photo workroom right at the end of the game to grab my bag. And just so happened to – see Duke Shelley coming off on the cart, like right past me in the tunnel, kind of underneath the stadium there. And I, you know, this is just all completely me looking at a guy's facial expression, but it didn't look great. You know, it looked like a guy who was kind of worried. So that obviously doesn't ultimately mean anything, but I'm cautious right now about Duke Shelley's status. I would say that at least, especially because Cedric Dozier's taken his lumps when he's been in there this year, and in fact, they put Cree Moore in the game, actually, instead of Cedric Dozier when Duke went out. So,
yeah, and it takes a lot to get Cree to play. So,
yeah, yes, it does.
Yeah.
What about Elijah Lee? I know he went to the locker room also. Did you hear anything on his status?
I think he's fine. It looked like something like with his hip, maybe was just a little sore, because he basically just ran in to get ice, and then he was back out.
Okay.
Pedaling a bike after that, so I think Elijah's fine.
That's good.
Okay, so looking ahead, Bill gets number 200 Saturday, then TCU, I don't know, seems like kind of a toss-up. Probably K-State's a little bit of underdog in that game, but you know, where should K-State's fans start looking for bowl tickets right now?
Yeah, I think you have 3 possibilities, with 2 of them much more likely than the others. The high apple pie in the sky possibility would be Oklahoma, I guess Oklahoma State. One of the teams sneaks into the playoff and everybody moves up in the pecking order. You could get to Orlando for the Russell Athletic Bowl. I think much more likely is either the Texas Bowl, which is in Houston, Reliant Stadium, obviously the bowl that Ron Prince went to. Let's see, that game is an SEC opponent. I've seen like Ole Miss linked there. And the other one's the Cactus Bowl, which is a little further down the pecking order, and that is Arizona, Phoenix area. So get ready to make that trip again after the back-to-back years. And let's see, what, 12-13? And that's supposed to be a Pac-12 team, but I don't think they're going to fill all their bowl slots. So you might wind up with just some random other bowl-eligible team, which would not be nearly as exciting. For instance, last week ESPN projected North Texas to that game. So,
oh boy,
that may not be as exciting.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up Oklahoma State, and this is something crazy happens with all the teams ahead of them, like there's no way they get in unless the playoff committee is really counting the Central Michigan game as a win, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me it just comes down to, and this is sort of the beauty of the selection committee and not having to be bound by just numbers, you can use the eye test. And I just, you know, Oklahoma State's fine. I think they're a pretty good team. But, you know, looking at the eye test, I'll let me put it a different way. Would you want to see Oklahoma State go play Alabama? You know, I mean, for the sake of the conference and watchability, I don't want to see that. Now, what I would be interested in seeing is Oklahoma's offense going up against Alabama's defense right now, seeing if they could do anything. Baker Mayfield, D.D. Westbrook, Joe Mixon. So to me, yeah, Oklahoma's your one real shot there. If they can beat Oklahoma State convincingly, get some chaos in front of them, which really they might only need, like, say, a Washington loss. And however things are going to work out in the Big Ten, just work it out so that only one Big Ten team is getting in. I mean, I think that's not totally out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's got Washington State and then probably Colorado. So that's, you know, that's going to be a tough couple games.
It is. It is. And I don't, you know, I'm not the biggest believer in Washington. I think they're good, but I think we've seen, you know, I mean, they got really handled at home by USC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right.
But I've been kind of a Colorado fanboy all year, so.
It's cool. It's cool having them relevant again, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Well, the last Especially question we always...
Don't we have a series with them coming up in a couple of years?
You know what? I'm actually a little embarrassed. I can't remember that for sure, but that does sound familiar.
Man, I know we had Washington State, but... Basically.
I just... Boulder was... I got to make two trips to Boulder to call games when I was doing student radio. And it's a cool setting, cool stadium. I like the city of Boulder. I'm all about Colorado being relevant in football again. I'm sure not all the fan base is going to agree with me on that one, but I'm all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Well, last question we always got to ask football-wise to our K-State guests is, what's the latest Bill Snyder rumor?
Yeah, you know, you get asked it all the time. I just honestly, what I always tell people is, I really believe... A lot of times when Bill Snyder is telling you something, you got to read between the lines or realize that it's some coach speak or just trying to distract you, whatever. I take actually everything he says about that pretty much at face value. I think he legitimately doesn't really think about it until after the season. Like he always says, he's going to evaluate it in the off season. I legitimately think he doesn't want it to become a distraction to him or anybody else during the season. And I really legitimately think he's telling the truth when he says the only things that would make him stop doing it are if he feels like he's not being effective, you know, if he feels like he is not doing his job well enough in one facet or the other. So right now it looks like this is trending towards an 8-win season, whether that's with the bowl game or not. I think 8 wins is probably the most likely scenario right now, and they're really young. It's the youngest basically that they've been ever under Snyder. There's more underclassmen starts already for this team than any in Snyder history. They just passed the 1989 team this past week for that. So I think based on all that, I mean, I'd put my money on him being back, barring some kind of unforeseen health issue. That's basically the way I've always chosen to look at it.
Yeah. Well, and I get that he doesn't want it to be a distraction during the season. That's good. But maybe during the offseason, even December, wouldn't it be nice of him to give us a distraction from basketball?
Well, if it's still in the non-conference schedule, yeah, that might work, because there's not a whole heck of a lot there. I don't know. Hopefully, basketball will keep us entertained a little bit more than it did last year. Mm-hmm. I'm cautiously optimistic about that.
Yeah. So they started the season. I haven't watched any of the games, but you know, they got double-digit wins against KenPom's number 328, number 277, number 171. Have we learned anything from those games?
It's a good question. I will say, in Hampton's defense, that's a good program. They've been to the tournament 2 years in a row, and they lost a ton of seniors and basically their entire starting lineup from last year. So they're trying to regroup. I think they'll be better by the end of the year. They won't be necessarily in the 300s, I wouldn't think, in KenPom. But still, it is Hampton. This non-conference schedule is not good. You do have the road. Tennessee may end up being the toughest game. If you miss Maryland somehow this weekend, then Tennessee's probably going to end up being the best game there, and that one's not even until you're in conference play. So there's not much there. And I would say this. They did not make 12 threes in a game each of the last two seasons. They just did that against Hampton. They've been better in general from the outside. It looks like they did improve their outside shooting, which is good because they were atrocious last year.
Yeah, they couldn't be worse.
Yeah, bottom 20 teams in the country out of all 300 whatever Division I teams. They're in the bottom 20 last year in three-point shooting. So I think we can say that they'll be a little bit better there, but I still have my questions and concerns, and it is going to be a while, I think, until we know legitimately how much they have improved. I think they're improved, but is it enough to, you know, keep this regime around and get the team to the tournament? We're still maybe a month and a half away from really knowing that.
Yeah. Well, what about, I mean, one of the things we talked about, a storyline when we talked with Joel, was sort of Dean Wade and Barry Brown could become more consistent, maybe even sort of step into leadership roles. It seems like Barry Brown started off very well, Dean Wade not as much. Are they sort of going in opposite directions right now?
Yeah, I am concerned about Dean Wade. Now, he was a little better yesterday. He had 8 points and 8 rebounds. He was just a little bit more active. He had the steal and the dunk. That was probably the highlight of the game. But when I say you can't take too much from games against, you know, teams that are in the KenPom 300s and whatnot, what you can take is if guys are struggling consistently and still showing you some of the same, you know, negative things that you saw throughout the year last year, you should be able to read more into that theoretically than positive things happening against bad teams. Mm-hmm. You know, if Dean Wade can't figure out how to assert himself against Hampton and Omaha right now, I think you can read into that that perhaps he still has a long ways to go as far as being aggressive enough. I mean, there's no doubt to me that he's got the skill. He, outside of Xavier Sneed, might have the highest upside of anybody on the team. I totally believe that. But obviously his issue has always been confidence and being aggressive. And I understand that when you're a freshman and you're playing in a really senior-laden Big 12 where it's guys that he's grown up watching and idolizing the Big 12. You know, he talked about that at Media Day this year, you know, playing against George Niang. Like, that's a guy that he had watched for a couple of years growing up. I get it. I get how that's intimidating, but he has got to, he's got to really get things moving in the right direction because they need him. I mean, the ceiling of this team could raise a lot if he gets more consistent. Barry Brown, I agree, opposite direction. He has been consistent. Dude's averaging over 16 points a game right now. Been in double figures, I believe, all three of the games, and I want to say even the exhibitions, too. And that's something Bruce has said, is that even going back to practice at the beginning of the year, he has been the most consistent guy they've had. And that is positive, because he can score. And if you can rely on him to score every single night, that'll be a big help. I'll see what you guys think about this. I've been attached to this since I saw it on Twitter. Someone called him a poor man's Ladarius Dunn, and that is like what I'm locked in on now. Like, that's what I want Barry Brown to be, rightly or wrongly.
Man, my serious son, that dude.
Either that or a rich man's Fred Brown, who was actually one of my favorite players back in the day.
See, Ladarius Dunn is a guy, he's fun to watch when he's not on your team, but he would be so frustrating, I'd be like, if he was on your team, you know?
I could definitely see that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the only game I've seen live this year was the Western Illinois game last week, and what stood out to me was A, that Dean was terrible, and B, that Wesley just really didn't play all that well, but it looked like, from what I saw from yesterday, he really stepped up a lot. So, did you see that?
Yeah, he did. I mean, that was one of his better games. It was a career high in points, 23, and he was knocking down the three. You know, that's another area where, you know, if you're trying to read into little things that you can decide are market improvement, he's never had more than 7 3-point makes in a year. Last year, he only had 6. I'm talking for an entire season. He's already got 5 this year. So through 3 games, he's almost at that point right now. The shot clearly is better. It's at least a respectable shot. You know, people will have to pay more attention to that. And so that's positive. And we've always known his defense is there. Forget the kid's name, but Hampton's leading scorer and the guy who was scoring in the first half that had 14, they switched Wes onto him in the second half. He scored 1 point the rest of the way. So Wes was good. That was good. Wes filled up the stat sheet, scored the ball. That was a positive step, I would say.
Well, what about, like I said, I haven't been watching the game, so I haven't really seen the lineups, but just from looking at the minutes, it seems like maybe they've been going smaller more, and that's something I'd like to see. I think it'd be more entertaining. You know, do you think we'll see more of the smaller lineups?
I honestly think they might have to go smaller because, and this is part of the issue that I have right now with this team, is down low, outside of DJ, you know, we really have right now. Dean has still been up and down. Dante Williams missed, you know, Dante Williams has not practiced very much since he's been on campus because he had the injury situation last year. Then he had the concussion, right, as things were firing up this year. So, you know, they got him into the game for 3 minutes yesterday. But I'm not sure that you can count on too much from him this year. And then James Love is going to be out for the year with his foot ordeal. Isaiah Maurice is the guy. Like, if they're not going to go small all the time, if they want to have some punch coming off the bench underneath, it's got to be Isaiah Maurice. And while very skilled and talented, he has it written all over him that he's going to be real up and down throughout the year. Yeah. So I don't know how consistently you can count on that. And one of the guys who's been as consistent as anybody so far has been Xavier Sneed. So I'm with you. You know, if you want to have Wes and Sneed in the lineup at the same time, like at the three and the four with a couple of the guards and then DJ, I'm all for it. I'm all for going that way because they have some scoring punch there. They have some firepower from the outside. They can get out and run. And frankly, down low is not really going to be their strength right now.
Yeah, I wrote a story about Isaiah after media days because he really talked. I don't know if you were there, but he really talked up his game a lot. And I was thinking in my head as I was listening to him talk, I'm like, wow, this kid's in for it. Like he's going to wake up real fast. And it looks like he really has. So I don't know if he'll turn it around or not, but he needs to, like you say, if we don't want to have to go small all year, he's going to have to do something.
He's, he's skilled. Bruce always seems to really like the stretch fours and guys like that. He can shoot it. He's got a nice stroke, and he can handle the ball a little bit. He's certainly not bashful about shooting it, but I've seen him get pushed around some. You know, he's skinny. Mm-hmm. He's a skinny guy right now that needs to hit the weight room. And I think that's the fear. You know, when he starts going up against legitimate Big 12 bigs, I think he's going to get pushed around. Yeah.
So I guess as a closing thought on K-State basketball, if you're sitting around Thanksgiving dinner table, you know, maybe after some tense political discussions with your family, you want to get in a good mood. Do you turn on Kansas State basketball?
Okay. So basically what you're asking me is, will they beat Boston College and or Maryland? Is that what that is?
Sure.
Okay. Well, Boston College, yes. Yeah. I think you're safe to turn on BC. They've already lost to Nicholls State this year, so they should be able to handle that. They've been a really bad Power 5 program here recently. Maryland, man, admittedly, I haven't done a ton of research on Maryland, but I know that they have Melo Trimble.
Yeah.
Melo Trimble is one of the best players in the country.
Yeah.
Maybe not much else surrounding him, but that'll be a huge test for the backcourt. I'm going to lean yes. I think it would at least be a competitive game if K-State is going to lose it. And the other thing I'll say is this. You may not have another chance to watch them play a team with a pulse in the non-conference. So get it while you can. Yeah. You know, even if it's not great. Get it while you can so you at least get the best kind of gauge that you're going to get on this team before they hit Big 12 play.
Yeah, I saw where St. Louis lost by 21 at home to Ball State and Travis Ward's debut.
Yeah, well, here's the thing with St. Louis. They've been killing, like, Missouri on the recruiting trail. Travis Ward has been pulling their recruits already, but it just looks like it's going to be the same thing with him, right? I mean, he could recruit at Oklahoma State. That wasn't the problem. But when it comes to actually coaching guys up, He doesn't get it done. So it may be the same deal there, just on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
And going back to that Maryland game, though, if it's anything like that North Carolina game from last year in the non-conference, I'll take it. I mean, that was close enough.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They were really fairly impressive with some of their efforts in the non-conference last year. Actually, kind of a similar setup to what they had in Kansas City last year. You know, Missouri was a horrible Power 5 team that they beat up pretty good.
Hey,
and they got their crack at a top 25 team.
Be nice.
Well, I feel bad for Mizzou. They had that kid get arrested today who just went for like 230 yards against Tennessee, and he couldn't even make it 12 hours without getting popped for pot. So I do apologize, Tiger fans.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, their head coach popped out of a coffin for their first, you know, exhibition game. So what can you expect?
I can't believe that. The state of Missouri athletics.
It's not good. We got a good wrestling team, though. Wrestling is still very strong.
Hey, well, there you go. Something to hang your hat on, yeah.
Yes. Anyway, all right, probably about time to wrap this up. John, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I enjoyed it, guys.
Yeah. And so can people follow you on Twitter or anything?
They can, yes. J.L. Kurtz, J.L.K.U.R.T.Z. is how you'll find me on Twitter. You can also follow at PowerCat Game Day on Twitter, too. Yeah, that's basically the long and short of it.
All right, sounds good. Derek, always good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Yep. This is Luke Thompson, signing out.